Welcome to the Nui Tech People podcast. My name is James McDonald. I spend my days interviewing some of the most innovative people working in the tech industry and hear some amazing stories. Each fortnight, we release a new episode sharing these conversations. This podcast aims to showcase the tech projects happening right here in Newcastle, provide key resources to help you grow your tech career, and share insights into the future of the Newcastle tech scene. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to another episode of Nui Tech People podcast. On today's episode, we have Jacqueline Garrett from GGWP Academy.
Welcome, well Jacqueline. Done.
GGWP, I was trying to practice. I was practicing before you come in and get rolling off the tongue. What does GGWP Academy stand for?
Good game, well played. Oh. It's kind of like the hashtag or the prompt or whatever you would type into the game or into your comms when you're playing another person. So, you know, at the end of a match or at the end of a game, you might type GG or GGWP.
Which gives us a bit of an insight into who you are, what you do.
Exactly.
Give people, the audience, for those who don't know who you are Newcastle local. But for those who don't know who GGWP are, could you give us a bit of an update?
Yeah, so GGWP Academy is an e-learning and influencer marketplace platform for gamers globally. So what that really means is that we teach people to become YouTubers or Twitch streamers or Facebook gaming streamers, and then we give them opportunities via our marketplace to work with brands from all over the world.
That's phenomenal. And I know a little bit of the backstory, but for those that don't know how GGWP came about, I don't imagine you just fall into, creating a marketplace or an influencer, platform from scratch. Can you give people, understanding of, where this come from?
Yeah, for sure. So my son at the age of 9 he was playing Pokemon from 5 onwards. And this is just in local competitions at, Good Game or, wherever, on his DS. And so he started to qualify for bigger and bigger competitions, whether it be Oceanics or, whatever. And then he was invited to the World Pokemon Championships.
Wow.
And the first one, I believe, was Anaheim that he went to. And over the next 3 years, we went to Nashville and then Washington as well. So, yeah, he went to 3 World Championships in Pokemon. And as part of him being signed to an esports team so that they would pay for his travel and everything else, it basically meant that he had to start creating content on YouTube.
Yeah.
And through doing that, I realized that there was a massive fragmented industry here that was, there was this big gap that nobody was really playing in. And it seemed like a really interesting place. And I really wanted to add a layer of education, professionalism, and structure to the world of gaming influence. It's been a little bit of the Wild West over the last 5-7 years, and I can't wait to change that.
Yeah, especially when you got kids, as you said, by the age of 9, who are then mandated to create content online in the, the big wide world of social media. It can be a bit dangerous, I imagine. And as you said, the Wild, Wild West.
So. Yeah. And I mean, at 9 or even at 18 necessarily, you don't know what it means to build a personal brand. You don't know what it means to engage an audience or to grow that audience. So unless you've been to uni or done it previously or gone to TAFE or learnt it, through your job or something like that, it's not necessarily a skill that you're, that you come out of school learning. So I really wanted to teach people things like, personal branding and social media 101 and stuff like that.
Yeah, then I imagine maybe the dark side, but the trolls and, at a very impressionable age, being attacked online would be massive.
Yeah, huge. One of the things I learned very, very quickly about managing my son's accounts online was the amount of trolls that will say literally anything to a 9-year-old. So, and I always had to keep my emotions in check, but deal with those things fairly swiftly and.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
That, it is. But,
it means there's an obvious need there to, manage that or help with that or educate, to your point. Mm. So your son's having some success online. You see an opportunity there. How was GGWP created or formed?
So in 2018, as a non-technical founder, I founded GGWP. So I did that by writing 20 modules of training. And that was all on the social media side and on the personal branding side. And I put all of that together. I started pitching accelerators because being a solo founder, you need to obviously find someone who can build the product, who can, you know, join this journey. So I had to really build up that narrative. I had to start showing that there was a market for this and get some funding under my belt so that I could find the right people and attract the right people. I was accepted to the Lead Sports Accelerator in Berlin, and that was only 2 months after founding GGWP just by myself. I just pitched, you know, online. I think I did about 8 hours worth of pitching to get onto that accelerator. And that was in Berlin. So I went to Berlin for the second half of 2018, left the family at home, as you do, and came back with a very clear understanding of what I needed to do to get the next lot of funding, find my co-founders, and start building this product. So I continued to build out the education piece. But when I came back, I was actually doing some mentoring and helping people out in the Sydney Startups Facebook group.
Which is a pretty engaged group, actually.
It is actually a really good group for startups. And I was just offering assistance in terms of pitch decks and, you know, things that I knew really well that I could help other people with. And I met Cassie and John, and they were working on a traditional sports app that would find talent and match people and stuff like that. And after about a month of getting to know their startup and them, we realized pretty quickly that we were building a very similar product, that our skills were really complementary to each other. I mean, John is a fantastic CTO. He comes from the background of Freelancer and Spaceship.
Yeah, right.
And then you've got Cassie, who has previously worked on a number of different early stage startups, including Freelancer and Spaceship. Wow. So they knew each other early on, and it just worked out that we happened to be building very similar products, very different industries, but that with them being both gamers, it worked out really well. I was able to convince them, you know, that our industry was in a massive state of growth while theirs was kind of in decline, unfortunately, for traditional sports, but yes.
Nice. So you've then found your technical co-founders, I assume, and then gone about building the product from the ground up?
Yes. So they stayed on full-time at their jobs for the next year and a half. And it wasn't until, so John is the CTO, Cassie is the CMO, even though she also acts as an operational manager. But we moved very quickly into StartMate, which was in 2021. And once we got a little bit of funding behind us, pre-seed funding we did with Flying Fox and Scale Investors and StartMate. And at that point, we brought them on full time. And from there, it's just been really, really quick. So it took us a little while to get going, coming from that non-technical background. And really, I think we kind of needed that because the industry was still very much even forming and still in its infancy, very much so. Now we have a very clear understanding of what the industry looks like and even what it's going to look like for the next, you know, 5-10 years and how we can be of service to that industry.
Beautiful. A couple of aspects that I want to pull apart. In particular, working on what would have been a side hustle for them, I guess, whilst working a full-time job, trying to get something from side hustle to full-time job, was the ticking point the funding that came in that allowed you to go, or allowed the other co-founders to go from side project to jumping all in?
Pretty much.
Yeah. And was there any advice that you could give to other people that are currently operating in a side project type of way? Because that's how a lot of startups, you know, start, right?
No, absolutely.
Unless you've got a heap of money behind you from somewhere else, a lot of people do have to work a full-time job and have their side hustle and play with that early mornings, late at night.
Yep.
Any advice for people to, you know, keep that going whilst in the side hustle phase or then make that transition?
The momentum or the want, because they're very different things. You can build up momentum, you can make a personal brand that says, you know, X, Y, and Z, but having the want to keep on going is really just knowing your own passion and how you can be of service to that industry. So knowing that what you're going to do is changing that industry and having that kind of that level of passion, I think is insanely important for an early stage startup to succeed. If you don't have that, it becomes very difficult, I would say, to be to keep motivated, to keep on going back and back to something that isn't necessarily earning you money or going anywhere right at that moment.
Yeah, that's a big point, actually. I feel like, you know, everyone has an idea to start with and is really motivated, cause, you know, run through a brick wall for it, right?
Yeah, but do it for 2 years while you're not being paid.
Yeah. Do you think the key point of difference for you was the fact that it was so close to your heart with your son being in that industry?
Yeah. I do think that that's a clear differentiator. And also that we just knew the industry so well. Our network was already in it. You know, my whole family was a part of the gaming industry. We were going to gaming cons. And even through COVID, I mean, you could see just how wildly useful gaming was to people through COVID. Yeah. Our industry actually soared through the roof in COVID. Yeah. So it was an interesting time.
Yeah, on that point, I think I'd be keen to get your opinion on it. Gaming, I think, can be viewed through two different lenses sometimes. Some people can view it as antisocial because people are just playing games online instead of being outside and playing with friends, etc. But on the flip side of that, it actually opens up communication channels for people that don't otherwise find communication with other people very easily. Keen to get your opinion on sort of how that's changed, your view on the market.
Yeah, correct. So it has been insanely useful for people who suffered with mental health or, you know, being too lonely and stuff like that through COVID. But I think it's highlighted a whole range of other things. I think that there's a study out there that shows that when a young girl games, she is 3 times more likely to go into a STEM career.
Yeah, right.
So I think that when you can show stats like that, you begin to see just how useful gaming is to someone in their problem solving, in their communication skills, all of these other ranges of skills that you wouldn't necessarily get. So I would argue that, you know, with everything in life, whether it be, you know, drugs, alcohol, whatever else, you're going to look at that very small percentage, well, maybe not so small, but, you know, smaller percentage that is having an issue with addiction and stuff like that. The same goes for gaming. There is definitely a gaming addiction. You know, the World Health Organization has dictated so, you know, we go with that definition. But I think the number that it actually applies to is well below 1% of the gaming market.
Yeah.
So you've got to look at the good versus bad. You know, there's always going to be somebody who's negatively affected by something, but I think you've also got to look at these major positive effects that it can have on a person's, you know, confidence and career paths going forward.
Yeah, correct. I think, yeah, two things that right there, the career paths being one, is it's creating new careers and new opportunities for people outside of traditional, you know, traditional career paths. But the second part as well probably ties into, you know, what you're doing, the educational piece around mental health and, you know, things you can do to potentially alleviate that. I mean, you're not going to fix all of the problems, but that educational piece can definitely be something that helps in this market, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, nice. So the story today then, you've grown off the ground, you've got some co-founders on board, you've gone through an accelerator program or international accelerator program, got some funding locally here in Australia. I imagine like the industry continues to evolve. Does that bring us to where we're at today? Where are you at currently? What's next for GGWP?
Yeah, pretty much. So right at the moment, I mean, if you look at our product, we have 90 plus videos showing people how to build their personal brand, how to do their social media, even how to do accounting for freelancers.
Yeah.
So it's down to that kind of level. And we have a product whereby a brand can come and list a gig on the platform, much the same way as a job would be listed, and influencers can apply to represent. So
that's a product that they'd like to have one of the gamers sell or promote?
Yeah. So Casio Watches came to us and said, we've got a Pac-Man watch that we'd like to sell.
Yeah.
And so they brought us the product. They gave us a budget. We went out and worked with a number of different influencers, and we actually sold out that product within a week in Australia.
Wow.
And so and that was, you know, the only marketing campaign that they actually put together for that particular watch. So we know that it was well effective. And that's one of the things we're really trying to prove out, is that the smarter that an influencer is, the higher the ROI on these marketing campaigns, because that's what brings all of these brands back to gaming, and why we wanted to add the professionalism and structure and everything else, because we could see, you know, there were literally hundreds of millions of dollars coming into gaming in this way to work with influencers, and there was no one really sort of facilitating this this exchange.
Yeah, well, I think that the big point there as well is those micro influencers, right? Like, I think the Red Bulls of the world are going to, you know, sponsor maybe the top, you know, very small percentage, but those micro influencers, it's the same in gaming as everything else in the world, right? Micro influencers, there's a big market there of hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars being poured into those markets that somebody with, you know, a couple of, you know, I don't know, hundreds or, you know, thousands of followers can actually have a big influence.
Absolutely. We work, that's actually where we play the hardest, is the other 99%.
Yeah.
That top 1% of brands and top 1% of influencers, that's, you know, kind of already organized by agencies and stuff like that. What we're really interested in is the other 99% and creating that creator economy from the ground up so that everyone can be a part of this, this economy. It means that startups can engage us for as little as $5,000 to get their name out globally with influencers, you know, via gaming. It means that we can work with everyone on the way up to that top 1%. And that, you know, not only does everyone get a go, so to speak, but it also means that, you know, brands can engage and get as much out of this as possible. And I think the really cool thing about this is that we can work with so many different and diverse types of brands. We can work with VPNs. We can work with fintech providers. We can work with fashion, sneakers. we've worked with, as I said, Casio watches, Indomie noodles, Logitech. Just so many different brands across, you know, every ecosystem. And I guess, you know, the technology that we're building out is really changing ad tech.
Yeah.
It's really moving into that wider piece about we're qualifying influencers for the first time. Yeah. We're actually showing that, you know, these people, the people on our platform, are smarter. Yeah. They know what they're doing. They didn't get there by luck.
Yeah.
And they know how to represent your brand and get you, you know, really great ROI on your campaigns.
Yeah, right. So you've got the educational part for, you know, obviously influence themselves so they do a better job of building their brands. Yeah. And then on the flip side of that, you've also got the ad or the marketing model, which can help companies, you know, find the right influencers to support their brands.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right.
What I love about that also is, you know, brands and marketing dollars are no longer just spent for, you know, pure branding. You know, they want to look at their attribution models.
It's not just
models.
Brand awareness anymore.
Correct, right? They want to look at their attribution models, and they're quite smart about, you know, where marketing dollars go now. And if you can actually tie that into, as you said, the influencers that can, you know, can actually get a, you know, show their ROI on the spend or you know, how that plays out for the company, you're differentiating yourself than the rest of the market.
Hugely. And I guess when we talk further about the technology and the more legacy piece that we're building on the other side of this immediate marketplace that we're building, we're talking about the alignment of brands. So we're also talking about, you know, how do we utilize AI to build an engine that will align both sides of that market.
Yeah, wow.
So we're looking at things like Red Bull, for instance, is an adventurer style archetype, you know, in branding. And so if we can match Red Bull or that particular archetype with an influencer from the same archetype, it means that the cut through and the ROI is going to be so much higher.
Yeah.
Because that audience is already set up for that message.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love that. And that's when you get some smarts around the marketing that really differentiates yourself than the rest of the market. The path today, obviously, you're at a point now where you've got a platform, you've got users, you've got brands. What's next? What's next? And then B, what's a greater vision? Like, what's the end game?
Yeah, look, I might start with the end vision. For us, it's really about that education structure and professionalism for the gaming industry. That's the first and foremost of what we're trying to do. At the end of the day, we also want to make sure that brands can get the ROI and get the, you know, exactly what they came for out of the gaming industry. In a wider sense, that also means that the technology that we're building at the moment is going to be licensable or whitelistable out to other influencer marketing or marketplaces all over the world. So we anticipate this to be not only for gaming, but to go out to the verticals like beauty, fitness, lifestyle, travel.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the plan within the next 5 years. We've actually got a very well-detailed plan that gets us there. So we're pretty excited to implement that over the coming years. But at the moment, we are actually crowdfunding. So we've previously raised 1.125 mil with great investors like Flying Fox, Scale Investors, as well as smaller angels as well across the ecosystem. But now we're looking to crowdfund. We've engaged our community and really wanted to show product market fit through this.
Yeah.
And we've raised $393,000 to date just over the last 2 weeks with our community.
Yeah.
So I think that that's a great teller of what our community thinks of our product. And now we're taking it out to investors and angels and other business people to participate over the next 7 days in our crowdfund.
Yeah, wow. So we've got 7 days from today, which is October 20th. So we've got October 27th it closes. We'll try and get this podcast out ASAP to try to give our community an opportunity to actually have a look in this. For those who want to potentially get involved, I imagine there's just a simple link they can click on for more information.
We're on Equitize. So if you simply go to the Equitize equity crowdfunding platform, you'll see us pretty quickly there.
Nice. I think we had Mike from Decky on recently, maybe also went through Equitize. Yep. So we'll share that link in our show notes as well and any social media posts that we do. For the vision of the next 5 years, for people that are willing to get involved or wanting to get involved or a little bit more interested, what's this current raise? What's that allow GGWP allowed them to do?
So we've gone with a min max. We have to on any crowdfunding platform. Yeah. So we've gone with a min max of 350 to 1.2.
Yeah.
The sweet spot is really that 550K that we're looking to get our next 12 months of runway out of.
Yeah.
This will allow us to build what we're calling the MVP of the next, you know, phase of our business. It basically means that we can streamline, automate. This means payments. It means a brand experience. It means that a brand can come build a profile. They can search for talent. It means that every time that they do a campaign, they can get post-campaign reporting automatically sent to them. So there's all of these things that we're looking to really provide the brand side now so that we can start to build that out and make sure that everything we're providing brands is what it should be, because we've done the user side. We know that they need the education and the gigs and all of these features, but now we need to build out that brand side, the payments between them, and really just automate everything that we've been doing manually for the past 2 years.
Yeah, nice. Does that include building out the team in any capacity?
It certainly does.
What's that team look like for the next couple of hires for you?
Yeah, so the next two hires that we anticipate to make are going to be salespeople.
Yeah.
Because we know now with our one salesperson what we can do. Now it's time to really bring up that revenue side of things, and we plan to do that in the US.
Nice.
We've got a number of brands that we need to onboard from the US, and we need someone on the ground there to do that. We've actually just started advertising for that role.
Wow.
We're going to be doing a little bit, I would say, you know, just in these early stages, there's going to be some outsourcing in terms of, you know, software developers and stuff like that. It's not really the way that we wanted to build our team. We wanted to build it out, you know, with solid full-time members and really grow. But with the market the way that it is, we've decided that we need to do it this way now and move really quickly. So that's kind of where we're at now. We're going to be outsourcing our tech team and hiring some salespeople in the US.
With your CTO internally managing that, right? So managing the build. Yeah, nice. Yeah. So you still got that internal capability as well. Yeah. Beautiful. I imagine salespeople in the US and the gaming world, that might be an exciting hire for you. Like from a recruitment perspective, that's a pretty easy sell, right? Come join a company that's working both brand and influencer side in the gaming community. Surely that's going to be a pretty popular role.
It is, but I tell you what, when you tell people, you know, what the pay might be, that you're, you know, looking to use some equity or, you know, commissions and things like that, it can change things a little bit, especially when there's so much money in startups in the US.
Yeah.
So we're really relying on our network at the moment to help us with referrals. And, you know, obviously we need someone who already has a little black book of, of brands, of connections. So we're really trying to whittle it down. I think we opened it up, and I think in the first day we had 92 applicants.
Yeah, nice.
So it's flowing through really nicely at the moment. I think the hard part is going to be more about just finding the right person from it, of course.
Nice. You mentioned something there, the US and Australia. I think it's an interesting piece for anyone in Newcastle, but anyone in Australia in general. Finding money is more difficult in general. Even over the past 6 months, even worse. But how have you found that experience being a startup founder based here in Australia versus potentially being based in the US?
Oh, look, I have colleagues and peers in the US who are, you know, starting their own gaming startups. And they can pull, you know, 2 and 3 times our valuation over there and pull together a $2 million seed round very, very quickly and easily. I'm yet to see a friend over there who hasn't been able to do it, in fact. So I think that being in a more regional area like Australia for gaming in particular has been a really interesting road. In the beginning, we found that we had to educate investors and even tell them what it meant to be a part of the gaming or esports worlds.
Yeah.
So we were doing more education than we were asking for money.
Yeah.
We were just exceptionally lucky that we managed to get to know Matt Allen,
yeah,
who's in the space at Tractor Ventures. And he introduced us to Kylie Fraser from Flying Fox, then Eleanor, and Chelsea at Scale. Both of those groups support more heavily on female founders.
Yeah.
And, you know, being run by women, of course, they could see that we're in a really weird position. We're in a heavily male-dominated field. Female founder, you know, it was always going to be a bit of a long, hard road.
Yeah.
So we can't wait to get past this next point, because this next value inflection point for us is going to mean that we have a product that is completely different from anything in the market. It's completely undeniable at that point. You know, if we build exactly what we say we're going to build in the next 12 months, it will just surpass anything on the market. So I think that when we reach that kind of a point, there's no denying it. That's when we can go to investors in the US and be, you know, I mean, we've always been fairly confident.
Yeah.
But now it's like, here it is. Like, this is literally it. It's done. We're not talking about it anymore. We're changing the game. Yeah, we expect the investment to change dramatically from there.
Beautiful. I'll stick on that US point for one more bit. Do you think at some point in time that you're going to have to move to the US?
There will definitely be a part of our company that has to be in the US. There's no denying that. Whether I'm in the US is a totally different, question. However, I anticipate that there will be a point where I need to be there on the ground a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the flip side of that, there's some positives being in Newcastle or in Australia. What's kept you local to Newcastle and growing the business here in Australia?
I love the lifestyle in Newey.
Yeah.
I like being able to go to the beach. You know, if it's in the middle of the Christmas school holidays, you know, my husband might drive us up to Port Stephens. So I'll be working in the car for that hour, you know, 45-minute drive.
Yeah.
And get out and, you know, go do stuff with the family and then work on the way home. So I love the lifestyle that it allows us. And more so you're seeing the ecosystem change in terms of talent, and that talent grow and stay more local. You know, I think that 5-10 years ago, it's a very different story. And now with more and more exciting startups staying in Newcastle, you're starting to see the talent stay here a bit better as well. So I think that that's really exciting. I can't wait to see how we can grow that here as well. But I mean, primarily my team works remotely. So I work with, you know, most of my team are in Sydney, but I'm here in Newcastle.
Yeah. The ability to speak to other founders and, you know, bounce off them, I feel, is growing in Newcastle. You've now got a few people that have had some successes, even more so in Sydney, right? You can bounce off other people that have been there, done that. I think once you get to that next point and you are able to then share that knowledge, you know, it influences both the local community here in Newcastle and Australia as a whole.
Yeah.
And the other point you mentioned just before, female founder. Female founders are obviously a very small group, successful female founders or just female founders in general, and there's some obvious difficulties out there and challenges which make or have made your experience, I assume, much harder. Can you give some insights into, I guess, your journey to date as a female founder, and then also potentially some advice that you might be able to share with others?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had some interactions that would, you know, curl your toes and really make you cringe. For anyone who supports female founders, you would really cringe at some of the things that we've seen. I mean, I've been called just a mum with an idea. I've called, you know, I've been called all sorts of things. I've been told to go and find a male co-founder.
Yeah.
It's not been easy, and it certainly isn't easy when you're fundraising.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why most of our investors are female or female supporting is, you know, it's very difficult in any country, whether you're here or the US, to raise funds as a woman. So I think that just before COVID, the percentage of global VC money that went to women was at 2.9%. And this year it's gone down to 0.7%.
I was about to ask, do you think it's getting better?
No, it is not.
Yeah.
Very unfortunately. And there are still studies out there that show that women-led startups are performing better in terms of revenue. So I don't understand why the disparity. I think that the best advice I can give to anyone as another woman would be to just be insanely confident, even if you're not, you know, fake it till you make it, so to speak. I really hated that. And I actually had a few investors kind of say that to me, you need to fake it till you make it. And I was like, no, I'm conservative. I'm transparent. I'm always going to speak to you in real terms instead of blowing things up like a show pony. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When it turns out that I actually needed a little bit of that. I needed a little bit of that storytelling, a little bit more of that, you know, just blind confidence in yourself that sometimes, you know, they expect to see from men. So I think that, you know, for a certain part of this is investors looking at a founder and expecting to see certain traits because that's what they've seen of male founders. When they've been successful, they've been overly confident, they've been this, that. I think now that we need to redefine what that successful founder looks like.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't necessarily look like that show pony.
Yeah, that's a sad situation, and especially sad that, you know, it's not changing for the positive, you know, as quickly as any of us would have hoped.
Mm.
Have you found that there is a strong support network for female founders in Australia?
Yeah, absolutely. There are men out there championing female founders, which is fantastic to see. There are women out there, you know, starting to put together funds, which is also great to see. And there are a few existing as well. There are also accelerator programs like SBE Global, which is a springboard network for female founders to go to the US. So we've also done that program too. I think that in these early stages, while we're still really trying to move the needle on funding going to women-led founders, women-led startups, we really need to stick together. I think that we need to lean into being female founders, find the other people around us, and really utilize each other's networks and you know, make it happen together, because I feel like that's the only way it's going to move at this point.
Yeah, it would be nice to see, you know, if the next, you know, short, sooner rather than later, that trend line starts to, you know, obviously change.
And I think that I think it's actually been proven, don't hold me to this, but I'm fairly certain that the more you invest in women, the more they turn around and invest in more women.
I can't
wait to be on the other side and actually, you know, helping and mentoring and funding other women. I so badly want to get to that place.
Yeah, get to the place. Obviously, the key focus for you, obviously, is go super narrow, super focused on your building your company first, and then the opportunity to then give back to that community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, beautiful. Taking an idea from zero to one, super difficult. I feel like lots of people have ideas. Ideas are worth nothing. Execution's everything, obviously.
Truth.
For anyone that's got an idea, might be working a full-time job somewhere else, but passion area, same similar to you, passion area and an idea around that passion area.
Mm.
Is there any advice that you would give that person? Because I feel like there's a lot of people out there in this day and age that, you know, are working a 9-to-5 job, reasonably happy, but have a passion area and have an idea around that. Can you give anyone some advice to, you know, to bring that to life?
Ideate really quickly.
Yeah.
Constantly coming up with new and different and more effective ways of, you know, how can I package this up and sell it, basically?
Yeah.
You know, will 100 people pay for it? make it happen, and then get into it. You know what I mean? So you've got to find out whether it's useful, if it's not been done before, what's the differentiator. There are so many little things there that need to be sorted out really, really quickly. And then you've got to figure out if 100, 1,000, a million people would pay for it.
Yeah, and you don't have to build that from scratch, right? You don't have to get a software engineer to build a full app. You can get a no-code solution, or you can just do it with an actual ideation, actually.
You can start with surveying your community. Then you can build a part of it. And then, you know, ask them what they think. And, you know, you can do all of these other things to figure out whether you're on the right track before you jump in 2 feet, no pay.
Yeah.
You know, so
no, completely.
I think that's the start.
Yeah, beautiful. From that starting point going to the next, like, you're managing a family, you're managing a business, fully remote business, you're managing fundraising. There's a lot to that. How do you manage your day?
I'm not the average, I'll give you that. Being in the gaming world, it can quite often mean a 3 a.m. meeting.
Yeah.
So I am very, very flexible and very adaptable. My day changes every hour.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit all over the place, to be honest.
Do you use a calendar for meetings?
I do, yes. So I use calendar for all of my meetings, obviously, but it just means that, you know, while I'm doing outreach on LinkedIn or whatever, it means that, you know, I could go from going to sleep at 8 p.m. like I would want to into, you know, oh, I've got to go to bed at 6 p.m. so that I can get up and do a call at 1 o'clock, or you know what I mean? So it really does change fairly, you know, consistently throughout the days.
Yeah, right. So calendar, obviously one tool. And then is there a project management tool, or is it, is it the G Suite? What, any other software that you use to?
Notion for everything.
Notion?
In our business, it's basically our Wikipedia. That's where we keep everything for the company, all of our succession planning, all of our sales, everything like that. And then that ties into HubSpot for outreach and stuff like that. So I would say that they're the two biggest tools that we're using internally at the moment.
Yeah, nice. HubSpot, Notion. That's a nice little tech stack.
Yeah, it's just simple.
Yeah, and I feel like HubSpot does that, right? They do that really well. They have a spot for founders and startups with little to no budget, but they're free options right up to enterprise-level solutions, right? That's beautiful. Outside of that, like, you've obviously gone through a journey. I feel like once you get there as well, there's a lot of education you'll be able to provide others. But like, for right now, is there a book or a podcast or anyone that you follow that you'd really, hey, this person was a game changer, or this book was a game changer for me?
There's one podcast that I do listen to a little bit. It's the Startup Playbook. Local ecosystem startup stuff. Then Atomic Habits would be the book that I would suggest to check out. I'm really again, I'm not a linear pathway on this either, but I like to, you know, if there's a particular startup like Camplify or like Canva, you know, some of those really cool stories that you just can't get enough of, they're the ones, like, you know, if they're on whatever podcast, I'll go and listen to that. So, I tend to follow startups, not podcasts, if that makes sense. Yeah,
follow the individuals and where they pop up. And what you'll find is when they're going there for a fundraising round, they'll pop up on everyone's podcast, or they got a book coming out or something like that. It's really good. We'll try not to take up too much of your time. Is there any, like, parting advice that you would like to provide anyone?
Again, just to go back to that female founder piece, that, you know, if we can all band together, and I don't mind when women reach out to me, I don't mind when anyone reaches out to me, but I certainly don't mind if a female founder reaches out to me for advice or help or an introduction or whatever. I'm always, you know, there to be a part of it.
What's the easiest way to reach out to you?
On LinkedIn is usually pretty quick and easy, under Jacqueline Garrett.
Yeah, and we'll link that up
in our show notes. Whole name instead of Jack's.
Yeah, no, I went through that only the other day. we'll link that up in the show notes to make it nice and easy for those as well. So Equitize right now, we're open for another 7 days. We'll get that out ASAP and see if people want to get involved. If they've got any more questions, I know that I've been through the site myself, and there is a lot of information there for any potential investors, but if there's any other questions, come to you.
Yes, absolutely. We've got a 40-page offer document on the platform that you can download. We also have a Q&A video that you can check out as well. So lots of information, but otherwise, please feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn or any of the social media platforms.
Beautiful. Thank you for you coming on and sharing your story on New Tech People podcast.
Thanks, James.
Thank you for listening to this episode of New in Tech People. To stay up to date with all our episodes, our show notes, and past episodes, please visit www.newintechpeople.com.au. Thank you.